I had this defining moment in my life. And when you put the hard work behind your dreams is when the magic happens.
We are Smart OSC. This is Commerce Talk, the podcast that keeps you one step ahead. I am your host, Aziza O'Byrne. Today, we are going to try to take the complexity out of cybersecurity and make that conversation a little bit more approachable for businesses, for business leaders, even from a personal point of view. And we are also going to give you the key elements that you need to know to start becoming more cyber resilient. And bringing this conversation to life, a well-respected name within the industry, he has spent over 17 years holding leadership positions within the cybersecurity space with Accenture, KPMG, EY, Salesforce, and that is just to name a few. He is now on a mission to make cyber simple. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. But ultimately, what he wants to do and what he's been helping people do is protect valuable data, grow, get closer to their customers, and just prioritize cyber resilience. So we're going to talk about that. Please join me in welcoming the very brilliant Jay Hira, all the way from Sydney. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on the platform, Aziza. It's lovely to be here.
Thank you. And I have to mention, we're also going to talk about, you know, the nonprofit organization that you have founded, which is Make Cyber Simple. But before we get into all of that, we've given a professional overview, but we want to get to know the person underneath all of that. We want to get to know the personal side of you. And I think no better way to do that than with Prices and Pitfall. This is a feature that we brought in a couple of weeks ago. We've played with a few guests. But it is ultimately your chance to tell us a little bit more about you, because you can tell a lot about a person based on their online purchasing behaviors. So with that in mind, Jay, if you don't mind, will you please tell us about a priceless purchase that you've made in your life, something that brought unimaginable value to you, and maybe a pitfall purchase, something that you bought, arrived home, it wasn't what you wanted, or maybe you just regretted the entire online purchasing of this pitfall product. So I'll hand it over to you.
Well, certainly, Aziza, let's get straight into priceless and pitfall. When it comes to a priceless purchase, getting a sit-stand desk, and even though we struggled with it before we started recording the podcast, is still one of the, you know, best buys that I've had. It's a game changer for my work routine. It's like having a personal assistant reminding me to dance between sitting and standing, transforming my work routine into a Bollywood dance of productivity and comfort. Now, brace yourself for the pitfall. I have this memory of playing a secret agent and ordering a tuxedo online. Now, in my mind, I was expecting James Bond, but what arrived was more like a funny old man in a costume, which is, you know, out of whack completely, about to get into a malfunction. And now you're looking at me and going, surely, Jay, you must have learned a lesson from it. Indeed, Aziza, I did learn two lessons through this experience. One, formal attire and online shopping don't always mix very well. And dressing for success involves a visit to the change room. And two, it's wise to let Mr. Bond handle the tuxedo department. I'm just better off sticking with work blazers. Tuxedo aren't really for me.
Wow, 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 wow. I have to say, we're in the early days of Prices and Pitfall, but for the record, I think that is my favorite and most honest recap of a pitfall purchase, because we never want to admit those mistakes. The moments where we had this image of ourselves, you had James Bond in mind, and the absolute opposite that you got afterwards. And we don't talk about it enough. The dangers of trying to buy suits online, any formal clothing online, it's a big risk. I have definitely seen my own fair share of clothing mishaps when purchasing online, and, you know, people buying jeans and they turn out to be the size of jeans for dolls. So we've definitely all seen that, and we've definitely probably all been there.
Exactly, exactly. And in fact, I thought of talking about the sit and stand desk, and imagine the struggles. We spent about 20 minutes getting my desk to a position where it worked well, where the monitor worked well. So it's just pitfalls. I can't even think of a priceless purchase anymore. If you ask me the question again, I might have to just change my answer.
No, okay. So for everyone listening, we spent a little bit of time before we hit the record on this episode to try just make sure that everything was set up okay. We give some time to this, and we had a few minor difficulties with the desk. But despite that, I think it is absolutely a great purchase and something that I need to invest in. I think a lot of us will agree that if you're working from home more, it's so bad just sitting down all day. And you're always trying to encourage yourself to get up and move, but sometimes that doesn't happen if you're in a really busy day. So I think a standing desk is an absolutely epic purchase because you're exercising while working. It's perfect.
100%.
So now that we have a bit of a better understanding about you, you know, you're a wise, down-to-earth person who has made some questionable decisions in terms of purchasing tuxedos online. But other than that, there's a lot to really admire. And I think the approachability that you have and the honesty that you have is exactly what we are going to bring through in this conversation as we talk about cybersecurity. You know, I mentioned you've spent 17 years within this industry. And I think what I've seen through all of your work is that you have spent so much of your time just making sure that this is a conversation that everyone can have and that it brings value to people and businesses, which is so important. Even before we're recording this, you're like, let's make sure that these questions are actually valuable to everyone listening. So before we get into that, I'd love to just talk about your career journey to date, because I really loved the story of your past. You know, you started at the beginning at the computer shop, your uncle's computer shop. So can you take us a bit through that journey, starting there and to where you are today?
Sounds like a plan. Let's do that. It's going to be a roller coaster ride, so buckle up. I was born and bred in a small town in Western India, and growing up, I was deeply interested in computers and often fascinated by the impact they've had on our society. Now, there were two main reasons for my interest. One, like you pointed out, the time that I spent through my school holidays at my uncle's computer store, where we assembled and often disassembled computers for troubleshooting purposes. The second reason was, again, I grew up in the 90s, which was the rise of the internet. Now, I was an average student throughout my schooling, but suddenly when it really mattered, I went from being an average to a below average student, which was year 12. I had big dreams of studying computer science and engineering, but with the scores that I managed to get in my year 12, I could barely get into mechanical engineering. Now, I had this defining moment in my life where I realized that I would have to work really hard and get exceptional scores to switch streams to computer science. And when you put the hard work behind your dreams is when the magic happens. Now, I didn't stop after securing admissions to computer science. I became fiercely competitive, always aiming for the top spot. But when I joined the workforce after completing the master's program, I got hit with a dose of humility that changed my perspective and the course of my career. Working with incredible mentors transformed my perspective of being at the top always into collaborating and transitioning from that competition mindset into a collaboration mindset, and working with exceptional teams, reshaping focus on collective wins and shared growth became my new pursuit. Now, as I grew older, I became clearer about my purpose and more intentional about who I wanted to be. Having had that sense of purpose, I've channeled all of my energy into pursuing my passion for cybersecurity and advocating for collaboration, greater inclusion, greater diversity in the industry. Now, fast forward to where I am today, I speak to businesses on strengthening their cyber resilience capabilities through the adoption of zero trust principles. And in my spare time, I am on a mission to make cybersecurity simple and accessible for all. I think that's where I conclude. And that's the overall journey that I've been on.
Wow, what a time it has been. And I think key areas and key learnings that you've had from that entire journey is going to scaffold itself across this entire conversation, because I know that you have a lot of great words of advice and words of wisdom too. So looking at that journey, you know, 17 years across watching the sector, what have been some of the biggest changes you've seen in cybersecurity, and how have those changes affected businesses?
I've always described cybersecurity as a complex puzzle with many moving parts. It is constantly evolving race without a finite finish line. And as we stand in 2023, our world is remarkably interconnected, paving the way for business growth and prosperity. However, it is the interconnectedness that also raises the stakes, as the reliance on cloud computing, machine learning, AI, and Internet of Things introduces a new dimension to both threats as well as defenses. Now, reflecting on when I started my career back in 2006 as a penetration tester, the landscape feels like a distant memory. It was the time, and I remember this clearly because I used to do an internship at Reliance, which was a telco provider. It was actually a time when 3G was just rolling out. iPhones were completely non-existent, and threats were very different to those that we experience today. Adversaries were largely individual actors, and the aim was to get a boost to their reputation by causing disruption instead of the option that is available today to monetize data by selling it online. Now, fast forward to today, adversaries are no longer limited to individual actors at all. They include highly sophisticated organizations with institutional hierarchies and R&D budgets of $1 million and leverage integrated tools and capabilities with AI and ML at their disposal. Now, with so many high-profile breaches in the last two decades and the extensive impacts ranging from loss of personal data in the cases of Sony and Equifax to critical infrastructure in the cases of Colonial Pipeline and JBS, and coming to the realization of the risk that third-party suppliers pose in the case of SolarWinds, it has been interesting to witness how consumer attitudes and their awareness has evolved so much. So to summarize, the three key takeaways from the last two decades are: one, prioritize cyber hygiene, just like brushing our teeth twice a day and flossing are integral parts of our oral hygiene. And we don't necessarily talk about these things, recognizing that cyber is not an area to cut corners, and prioritizing to get the basics right is the key to success. Now, just to be clear for our audiences, cyber hygiene includes activities like vulnerability identification, having a solid patch management process that is operating effectively, cyber awareness training for all staff, including contractors and partners, robust endpoint detection and response capabilities, and appropriate governance and oversight mechanisms in place to ensure that we're generating metrics that measure and communicate the success of our cybersecurity regime. The second takeaway is perimeters are fading, and no matter how tall or wide the wall is that we call perimeter at the end of our castles, attackers are going to find ways around it or under it. We're not saying that perimeter security is not important, but we're driving the point that businesses can't just rely on perimeter defense to keep the bad guys out, but instead need to identify high-value assets and place security controls closer to these assets. The last sort of key takeaway is breach prevention isn't enough, as cyber attacks have become a matter of when and not if. There is a need for us to put greater emphasis on capabilities to detect, respond, and recover the business back into operations, and no longer just wait for something bad to go wrong.
Yeah, that is a very powerful quote that you just ended with there. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, because it's going to happen regardless. And I think maybe there's something that needs to pivot in our mindsets in that sense, in that we always think if, we need to flip that to when. It reminds me of another quote that you gave or said before, which I think is pretty powerful as we look at it from this point of view. You know, as global cyber attacks continue to rise across the board, there's something very strong in the fact that you said there's no cookie cutter style solution to solving cybersecurity problems. And I said at the beginning, you know, there's a lot of complexity in the problems that organizations will face and will continue to face when it comes to protecting themselves. So I'd like to just talk a little bit about that, but also just about the importance of diversity as well when it comes to facing these challenges. As complex as they are, they need diverse teams. So let's talk about that.
Of course. Excellent question, Aziza. Now, before we talk diversity, let's shed some light on why there is no universal solution to cybersecurity issues. Now, there are three foundational questions that every business needs to find answers to in order to get started on safeguarding what's most important to them. What are you trying to protect? Really basic and simple, but you've got to understand which industry do you operate in? What's your business? Are you storing any intellectual property? Are you storing any sensitive data? Are you storing any credit card data? You've got to understand what are you trying to protect as a starting step? Who are you trying to protect it from? Is your focus to protect your systems and data against vulnerabilities? Or is it to protect against adversarial threats? Or is it to protect against environmental threats or accidental threats? These are all different, completely different sort of threat actors. You've got to be clear about what are you trying to protect against. The third and the last question is, what are the tools that you have at your disposal to protect? Now, the answers to these three foundational questions, and these are very basic questions, the answers are going to be so different for every business. And which is where the one-size-fits-all sort of approach doesn't work in cybersecurity. Now, let's talk about the importance of diversity. As we've discussed, adversaries are becoming increasingly sophisticated in the tools, technique, and procedures that they use. And growing number of organizations are realizing the value of diverse teams in order to stay ahead of the game. Given the complexity of cybersecurity as a puzzle, our teams solving this puzzle need to be as diverse as the problem itself. Because if we have a team with similar sort of ethnicities, backgrounds, and life experiences, they have the same sort of biases and therefore similar sort of blind spots in the way they solve problems. The more diverse the teams that we bring to solve the problem, the more comprehensive and complete the approach they have to solving the problem. Now, diversity, we clearly know, is the key. However, I believe one of the bigger challenges is that there are a lot of workplaces today that may tick the diversity box, but are missing out on extraordinary benefits that come from a diverse workforce due to lack of belongingness that minority groups experience. And I'm going to use an analogy to explain this. Imagine a sporting team that has diverse players as mascots, but are mostly warming up the bench and never in the game. Diverse workplaces that lack inclusive culture are similar to this sporting team, where diverse players have made it to the team but are rarely in the game. Now, the key point that I'm making is diversity will have an impact on problem solving and boosting innovation when we move past mere representation and have all of these players in the game. I'm just tired of seeing diverse people but just on the camera for the marketing campaigns. They don't have any voices. And if you're not listening to their voices and if you're not bringing them to the team, what's the point of just having these diverse people, you know, in the team? I think that's the point that we wanted to make.
That is so true. And I think it's the box ticking style is probably at the heart of a lot of problems that we see. It's the box ticking for cybersecurity checking list. It's the box ticking for diversity. It's a box ticking for problem solving. And it's that mindset of, well, we've done all of these things this way in the past, so let's take that checklist out and tick those boxes again, which is not the case anymore, especially in the case of diversity as well. And I suppose you're probably seeing that it needs a lot of thoughtful leadership, but it also needs, as that saying goes, the bottom-up approach, which is giving everyone voices, you know, those who are at the front lines of dealing with customers to those who are in the boardrooms. And we talk about it a lot, but it's those voices that are given at all routes of a business, through all funnels of a business. And naturally then, epicenters of problem solving will emerge in new ways. And it's almost that design thinking approach too, where all different abilities, all different mindsets, thoughts are all combined in one place to solve problems.
100%. I'm with you. But we aren't really seeing a lot of that happening. We're just seeing diverse people as mascots that are just warming up the benches and they're never in the game or playing. And, you know, they bring different sort of skills which will actually help the other players improve the game. But if they're just warming up the bench, then they're not really helping you solve any problems.
It is a really great analogy. And I think when I'm thinking of it, I'm also like, you know what? Those benches no longer need to be warmed. It's warm enough out here. Like, just get everyone out there on the pitch. Get rid of the benches. Get everyone out. Everyone on the pitch. Go play.
100%.
Okay, I'd love to talk a bit more about customers and look specifically at the retail sector. because naturally, in the world of e-commerce, globally, the average cybersecurity attacks per industry, retail is high up there. You know, we've got education, research, government and military, healthcare, communications, retail. And I think there's this really interesting, what I would describe it as, an opportunity intersection in retail. And you've spoken about this before, and you've touched on this in your work. But there's this intersection, I think, of risk and reward, because customers just have zero tolerance for breaches. They have zero tolerance for brands, retailers who will not give them a seamless and protected journey. So I'm wondering, with that risk and reward in mind, can retailers or organizations leverage cybersecurity practices to gain a competitive edge within the market? What's in it for them?
So sure, Aziza, let's talk about this intriguing intersection of risks and rewards in the world of e-commerce. Now, the COVID-19 pandemic threw us all a curveball, which dramatically impacted consumer behaviors, leaving retailers to pivot from the brick and mortar business model to online sales. Now, as retailers rushed up to set up their digital shop fronts, there were two sort of distinct approaches that emerged. Some crafted their online presence like master architects, integrating strong cybersecurity privacy practices right from the foundation, similar to building houses with reinforced steel beams, making sure that everything is solid and secured right from scratch. On the flip side, due to the immense economic pressures, some went down the path of treating cybersecurity and privacy practices as an afterthought, sprinkling seasoning and spices on a cooked dish right at the top. Now, and if you know anything about Indian cooking, you'd know how important it is to cook the seasoning and spices right through the preparation stage and not just sprinkling them on the top, because it doesn't really work that way. Now, the point that I'm trying to make is that we as consumers have become so much more savvy about cybersecurity, privacy, consent management practices of online businesses, and we very well are cognizant of the value of the data that we hold, and we want to know if the businesses that we're dealing with value our data equally and are putting the right controls in place to safeguard our data. So to gain a competitive advantage in the retail business, it's all about transparency, authenticity, and trust. And how do you build that trust, and how do you make sure that the customers feel that you're protecting their data appropriately and not, again, you know, using their data or selling it off on the web?
And now mentioning trust, when you talk about trust, can we talk a little bit about the zero trust framework and what it is and how retailers can adopt it? What would be the first step?
Absolutely. So most businesses, including retail businesses, rely on conventional approaches to security that are still heavily reliant on perimeter defense. The approach was reasonable at the time when it was created, as the idea was to build big walls around the castle to keep the bad guys out. But in today's day and age, the old school perimeter defense is like guarding the front door and leaving all of the windows wide open. Not exactly the wise or the best strategy when your critical systems and applications are spread across on-prem, private data centers, and in the cloud. Now, courtesy of the rapid cloud adoption and the shift to a remote workforce fueled by the COVID-19 pandemic, the perimeter is starting to fade and completely disappear. So zero trust as a strategy focuses more on not just securing the perimeter, but securing what needs greater protection and removes any implicit trust in users or devices just because these users and devices are appearing on your corporate network. Now let's address the question of where do organizations begin their zero trust journey. And the first step is very basic. You've got to start with educating your key stakeholders, your boards and your leadership teams on the core principles of zero trust strategy, which include five basic principles. Focus on authentication and authorization at every single step. Removal of any implicit trust. Just because someone seems to be on the corporate network doesn't mean that they can be trusted. Aligning security initiatives with the business value that they deliver. The moment we start aligning what's the business value and why are we enabling this security feature or tool or process, it connects the dots for the business. They can see where are they getting the value. Adopting an assume breached approach, which we discussed, there needs to be more of focus on detect, respond, and recover capabilities. And lastly, thinking of zero trust as a journey. It's a sprint. You can't really just, you know, think of it as a destination that you need to get to. You know, you've got to constantly keep working towards zero trust. You may never be able to achieve zero trust, but at least you're working or shifting away from the unreserved trust to zero trust. That's the I think ideal first step to start the journey with.
Yeah, positioning it as a journey is very interesting because it almost brings us back to what we were speaking about earlier, those complex problems, but also complex goals or journeys together, having those diverse teams gathered around with that vision or that hope for approaching this in the next, I don't know, 3 years, 5 years, 1 year. But it's a joint goal for everyone to get behind once it's well communicated, which is very interesting. Now, besides the Zero Trust framework, what solutions or approaches can retailers adopt to cope with cyber attacks? And maybe this can be retail or outside of retail, but if we aren't looking directly at a Zero Trust framework, what are the first steps or the key stages to go with?
I think we could just keep things very basic. We talked about the importance of prioritizing cyber hygiene. Then there is this art of identifying assets that are most crucial to the business and ensuring that there are a combination of preventive, detective, responsive, as well as recovery controls designed and operating effectively around these high value assets that are critical to your business. Segmenting the network is another technique that would limit movement of or lateral movement of threat actors. If they've already got access to a system in your network, they wouldn't be able to hop and move laterally onto other systems. Enforcing multi-factor authentication capabilities on all of your web-based platforms and applications, those are really sensible approaches. Leveraging contextual information that the user brings, such as device fingerprint, location, identity of the user, role assigned to the user, and enforcing conditional access controls. These are all important steps as well. Educating the entire workforce is very critical. But remember, it's not just our crew or just the employees. It's about our allies too, our supply chain. Just like forming alliances in the game, we've got to check the armor of our allies. One weak link in the chain can lead to a domino effect, and which is where I think it's a lot of organizations continue to focus on strengthening controls that are limited to themselves without really witnessing or noticing what's the supply chain sort of repercussions. What are the suppliers that we're relying on that are delivering material services to us, and how we even making sure that they've got the appropriate level of security capability or maturity of or risk capabilities. I think it's, you know, one weak link in the chain has a domino effect, could affect you, and which is where I think that is another sort of space that organizations can focus on.
Great point, actually, in terms of looking outside of yourself, because that's not always easy to do. And that's not the first place that you'll go looking. You know, your number one priority is looking at protecting, as you said, your castle, protecting the walls around what you have. But actually, in this digital age, in today's world, everything is so interconnected. You are just as much responsible for yourself as you are with your suppliers and what they stand for and how they protect themselves too. In the eyes of the customer, it's on you and it reflects on you. So it's a really good point. Okay, now looking to the future, something that I love to do with our guests. Look into the future. What are some emerging trends that you are keeping a close eye on?
Great question again. I'm going to take the liberty to continue our focus on security. Our dependency on IoT devices has grown at an exponential sort of pace. These devices range from smart wearables that each one of us is wearing, home appliances, cars, building alarm systems, fire alarm systems, etc. And while these connected devices and sensors that are deployed throughout our houses are actually improving the way in which we operate, they're improving our lives every day, but there are all these doors and windows into our homes that need to be secured appropriately to avoid them from turning into a gateway into accessing our network. There aren't really any standards enforced on manufacturers to ship them with passwords or to require the user to set their own passwords. However, there is a hope that there is a labeling standard likely to be rolled out in the US that provide consumers of these IoT devices with information on what are the potential security threats posed by these devices, at least that warns them on if you're connecting a lot of these things into your homes. They're listening to you, they're capturing your moments, and they are also opening doors to your networks, to your homes. Now, that's one of the trends. The other one is OpenAI's conversational model ChatGPT attracted millions of users in 2022, triggering nationwide debates on the opportunities and risks of AI. ML and AI will continue growing in importance into the future and will play an increasingly important role in cybersecurity as well. The applications of ML and AI could range from recognizing patterns that indicate threats, could indicate identification of high-value assets for organizations, could actually help organizations identify which asset is storing sensitive data and what's the criticality of an asset to the business. It could also help determine the level of exposure based on the control gaps identified on the critical system. So I think that's the second one to watch out for. The last one is going to be quantum computing, with its potential to increase computational performance, promises to be the future of computing. The most commonly talked about threat, because as soon as we start talking about advantages of what a technology brings, straight away we get into, okay, what are the threats? Let's talk about, you know, the risk versus sort of opportunity sort of thing. So the most commonly talked about threat of quantum computing is the potential to break all of the industry standard encryption algorithms that we use today. So there you have it. I think those are the top three sort of emerging trends worth keeping a close eye on.
Well, there's a lot in that. There's a lot to be looking at for the future. I wanna hang on that customer side, actually the consumer side, because a lot of the technologies, the new emerging technologies and tools that are used day to day, you know, across media, and everywhere we look, there are always, and it's good, always to have those conversations about the potential risks and threats that they bring, but not so much in the everyday items that we invite into our homes and into our lives, the wearables that you mentioned there. I'm just even coming from my own personal side. I buy a new watch or invite a new piece of technology into my life. I buy it. I put a lot of my own personal data into it, and I'm on my way. So it's really interesting that you mentioned that about the USA and kind of those guidelines and maybe bringing up that awareness more so around customer and consumer, direct consumer devices.
And I agree with you 100%, and which is where the best way to secure bigger businesses or organizations is, how do you make cybersecurity personal for individuals? If you can help individuals understand the fact that you've got to start with protecting your own home network, you know, protecting what sort of data are you putting out there, you know, about you, your kids, your wife, your family. I think that sort of awareness, if we start focusing on that, I think that, you know, it gives a lot of values to employees. And at the same time, employees become more aware of the implications of putting the data out there. I think so. It's like a dual-edged sword. You equip your employees with all of this information, and, you know, they help not just raising awareness of how do they protect their own families, but also bring that smarter sort of mindset when they're using, you know, work laptops and work machines and work networks.
I think this is a very good way to talk about then what work you're doing with Make Cyber Simple. I know it's in its early days, but I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Of course, there's just a lot that's in my head but needs to translate to reality. So Make Cyber Simple, as the name suggests, came from a simple mission to make cybersecurity simple and accessible for all. We started with basic steps of making cybersecurity simple for kids at schools, young adults at universities. We have a plan to build a conduit between students and universities that seek internship or entry-level opportunities into the cybersecurity industry. And on the flip side, the small to medium-sized businesses that are struggling to afford full-time staff or consultants or even interns. I think if we connect these university students who are looking out for opportunities to get into or to land roles in cybersecurity with these small to medium-sized businesses, which are, you know, that are not really capable or do not have big budgets to spend on cybersecurity, if we connect the two together, you know, we have a platform which would equip these small to medium-sized businesses with hands on the ground to establish cybersecurity basic hygiene in their organizations, and these students are going to get exposure to cybersecurity. So I think that's the sort of model that we want to build in the future with Make Cyber Simple. But again, it's a long journey, and still it's just a passion project that is getting fueled through whatever limited time I have in the day after looking after the girls in my household.
Well, I think it's very purposeful work, and there's a lot of what we've discussed today within that work and that hope for the future in terms of opening up conversations around cybersecurity, building awareness of it, but also opening up doors for careers and for potential future leaders in this space as well, because, you know, you spoke earlier about your journey in education, and I think the important thing that we all need to remember is that there is no linear route to a career. There is no linear way to doing what you want to do. So I think any place that helps to train up and give people, open some doors for people to enter into a very exciting place that can ultimately help others make the future more secure. So thank you so much for telling us a little bit more about that and what you're doing and the hopes for the future. Now, I'd like to know, in terms of leadership, what are some of the biggest challenges that leaders are facing today?
If you're referring to leaders more broadly, one of the biggest challenges is to establish the right balance between financial success for the business, looking after the well-being of people and doing good to the planet. It is like a classic conundrum, making investors, employees, and Mother Nature happy all at once, which is very, very hard balance to strike. But if you're referring to leaders in the cybersecurity industry, one of the biggest challenges that leaders face, or most head of departments for cyber or CISOs face, would be the challenge of crisis of prioritization, determining where to allocate time, effort, and resources can be incredibly challenging, especially knowing that the odds are working against us, where we've got to consistently get security right 100% of the times to defend the businesses, while in contrast, the adversaries only need to get it right 1% of the time to break in and deliver a knockout punch to the business, crippling, you know, the business completely. And it's so hard to build trust again into a business once they've had a massive sort of cyber attack. So I think that's what the crisis of prioritization is, a bigger challenge that cyber leaders face.
Prioritization is very, I think a lot of people that listen to this will relate to that. And as well, as you touched on there, if there was a big attack, or, you know, building up your team and building up your momentum after that as well, and having to take the time to do that while you're also juggling so many other things. So it cannot be easy. Now, I know we're coming to the end of this brilliant conversation, and I just want to say before we finish, thank you so much for the time you've given us today. I love asking people this. Books. We love chatting about books. What have been some books that have been instrumental in your career success? I'm not, you know, the favorite book might be a very hard one to ask. So if you could give us the name of some great books that you've read that have helped you along your journey.
Well, great question, Aziza. And it's so hard to pick a few when we know each one of the books that we read influence the way we think and operate, and more importantly, broadens our view of the world. Now, some of the books that come top of mind, and not necessarily in, you know, in an order of priority, Essentialism by Greg McKeown taught me the art of doing less and getting more out of life by picking the real gems that you need to focus on from the shiny distractions that we have in our lives. And one of the simplest things that I've changed in my own routine is decluttering my work wardrobe, which now constitutes of just black and navy blue pants, white and light blue shirts, all of them from the same brand, the same size. I think the decision making that it saves every morning, I get to focus more on the precious moments, preparing the Indian masala tea and then sipping that tea, rather than figuring out what clothes am I going to wear for work. So I think simplifying life is what the book teaches you, Essentialism. The next one is Presence by Amy Cuddy. Now, ever felt like confidence is a secret code only for the elites? Well, trust me, I've been there and felt that. Presence taught me that striking a superhero pose can work wonders to our confidence. It's the body and the chemicals that the body generates when you're, you know, striking a superhero pose starts affecting how you think and operate as well. So I think it's a beautiful book. And if you haven't watched Amy Cuddy's talk on TED Talk, then you've got to definitely get on to that. The last one that I want to leave you all with is Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance by Angela Duckworth. Now, this one's like the old mate who pulls you up when you're going through a tough time. You know this very well. Success isn't about having all the moves. It's more about dancing through the storms with a cup of resilience in your hands. Life turns into a dance floor when you've got the power of grit in your groove. So I think grit is really, really important.
Oh, wow. That is so beautiful. The grit, I think, is something, you know, a few of our guests have mentioned grit in the past. And it's something that they've said, they've learned across their career journey, that it's the thing that they've grabbed years of learning. And it's grit, that word grit that they've kind of taken hold of. Now, if we were to go back in time, what advice would you give to your younger self?
Oh man, you've thrown a bit of a time travel curveball here, haven't you? Hold on now, before we dive into that, let me just get it out there for the record that age is merely a number. And I've barely celebrated my 20th birthday last year for the 20th time. It's a bit of a tradition, you know, to keep the youthful spirit alive. If I could speak to my younger self, I could share so many pearls of wisdom. But for the sake of focus, let's stick with two golden nuggets of advice. All right, time for the first lies of Jai's advice by Embrace Yourself. And yes, with all the quirks, strengths, and even the kinks that make you who you truly are, it's like a recipe for a smashing dish. Every single ingredient counts. And for the second slice, our lives are like garden, and the company we keep, the blooming flowers that are around us or that surround us, are so important. So the note that I'm going to leave for my younger self is, water those friendships that truly nourish your soil. Seek out the ones that sprinkle life, laughter, and growth. And, you know, you've heard of this saying which goes along the lines of your vibe attracts your tribe. So surround yourself with people who want to grow and at the same time want to see you flourish and grow with them. You know, if you can find those and, you know, surround yourself with them, then I think those are the two sort of pieces of advice that I'd give my younger self.
Okay, now I think all of us are wondering if we could just have the full cake. You should have your own podcast with all of this wisdom and with all of this great advice. Thank you so much for that. I think that is honestly the most lovely way to end this brilliant conversation. I just want to say thank you so much, Jai, for taking the time to be with us, for answering questions, for bringing such value to our listeners. We really, really appreciate it. So thank you for everything.
Thank you. I'm really grateful for this opportunity. And thank you for your kind words, man.
have it. A huge thank you to Jay for his time in joining us today and putting us in safe hands and taking out some of the complexity in the subject of cybersecurity. As I mentioned, he is running Make Cyber Simple, so you could check that out. And you could check us out, smartosc.com, our brand new gorgeous website, and you can listen into more episodes of Commerce Talk while you're there. A huge thank you once again for spending your time with us. We really hope that you enjoyed today's conversation. We are on a bit of a high this week. We just found out that we won Podcast Interview of the Year at the Info Radio Awards with Radio Days. So we are absolutely delighted. And a huge thank you to you for listening, even if this is your first time or your 10th time or your 50th time listening to the show. It is all thanks to you. It is all thanks to our amazing guests and to everyone at Smart OC, the entire team working behind the scenes. So thank you. And if you have any questions whatsoever, you can get in touch with us. Follow us on LinkedIn. Just hit that follow button and we'll be there to answer any questions that you may have. Until next time, this is Commerce Talk. We are Smart OSC. I am your host, Aziz O'Byrne. We will speak to you again.